All right, so just introduce yourself.
I'm Jack Yonason. I run the Low Pub.
So we just had the Biz Forum. Why did you decide to host the forum here at the Low Pub?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. I mean, I live and work in the downtown. I've lived downtown for years, so it's an issue that personally affects me. Also, this thing was going to happen no matter what, and I figured that why not give it do it in a place where people that have a dissenting voice, people that have another opinion from the people that are on the stage, could come and voice their opinions and dissent. Some people have issue with it happening here, and that's fine. That's all part of this. That's all part of what we do as humans. We get to speak our voices, and that's what I wanted to happen tonight. Exactly what I wanted to happen tonight. People got to say their piece. If people don't like the decision that I made hosting it, that's totally fine by me. That's their choice to agree with or disagree with, you know. So that's that. I'm not in support of the policies of the downtown biz. I'm not in support of the policies of the Winnipeg Police. I want to see, like everybody in the world, would love to see a situation where those organizations didn't have to exist, but they do. And so we have to work within a framework, and we have to do what we can as individuals and in our communities to make it so that that safety comes from our communities and then spreads out from there.
Hello, this is Assistant News Director Scott Price. On November 17th at the Low Pub, the Downtown Biz had a forum on downtown safety. This was in conjunction with a number of other forums that they had organized in the month of November, covering transportation and housing as well. So the forum on safety was the most controversial in its lead-up, as there was a lot of discussion over on Facebook about some of the problems that some people had with this forum and the policies of the Downtown Biz and the Winnipeg Police Service. For all of that, and for all of the very tense nature of the forum through the whole night, intermittently through the forum there was people shouting at some of the panelists, some people obviously quite angry. But although some have categorically written off this forum as a catastrophe and decried it for its quote-unquote lack of civility, through a lot of the points in the forum, there's actually some very important points raised about downtown safety and policing, and specifically the role of the biz and the role of the Winnipeg Police Service. So the safety forum was moderated by Sean Carvinal from CBC, and the panelists were David Thorne from the Winnipeg Police Service. He's the superintendent. Rick Joel, who is the safety coordinator for the Downtown Biz. Rick Linden, who's a professor of sociology at the University of Manitoba. Dave Stone, who's the manager of Portage Place. Damon Johnson, who is the chair of the Aboriginal Council of Winnipeg. And Gabrielle Giraudet, who is the crime reporter for the Winnipeg Free Press. And so now, what I've basically put together is, this is about a good solid half hour of some of the more interesting and important exchanges that happened at the safety forum that night. And for the most part, you're going to hear the voices of Rick Joel and David Thorne, who were, for the most part, the ones being interrogated that evening. As well, you will also hear from Gabrielle Giraudet, and at the end you will hear from Damon Johnson.
Well, excuse me, it's not really a question, but more, I want to talk to the gentleman there. What was your name again, sir?
Dave.
Hi. Hi, Rosie, Point Douglas. Not quite downtown, but down near close.
Yeah, good enough.
Activist in the community for many, many years, helped on the police advisory committee for many years. I think it was under Herb Stevens's follow-up dude. And we had a really good model in place for some years with the beat cops, with the bicycle police, what have you. There was actually headway being made in the more problematic areas when you're talking about let's make a drug deal right out in the open. And what we found that was rather disconcerting was when, I don't know, you know, where this decision came down from, but I'm going to liken it to what we could be doing now in terms of dialogue and what have you,
Sure. Is...
when the model was finally starting to be successful, when police were realizing that people in the community did have a valid point of view, had experience, that they weren't all, say, from one socioeconomic strata, you know, and thus being misjudged, that we were giving valid input. And we were starting to change attitudes within the police service, and then this great program got squashed. I saw officers being transferred out of one catchment area into another, thus, say, maybe 2 years' worth of intelligence and goodwill and social work and all the positive things that can happen within the framework of the police service being lost. For what? For an administrative shuffle. And so what I'm hoping is, like when the one gentleman earlier mentioned the need for several levels of dialogue. I've been a business owner downtown for many years. I have lived and owned downtown area for 22 years. Like I say, served on many committees. I walk downtown every day. Can't say I like the walk too much on some occasions, but I do it. So I'm saying right now, go to Keith. He knows me. Tell him what we're saying here, that we want to have these dialogues. We should be having open public forums, and we don't need money to take public opinion. You know, if I have to hear one more goddamn report that needs to be filed, you know, we could stack position papers up to frigging Mount Everest. What a waste of money. Let's talk to the people at all levels. And if you can take that back to Keith, I would be so happy because, you know, I know a lot of you guys and I understand your situation and it can be pretty frustrating, but as well as frustrating for the rest of us caught in the middle. Thank you.
So, actually, if you could just tell us a little bit about community policing and where the service is. I mean, a lot of people out there are waiting for the crime strategy that's supposed to come out.
Yep.
And community policing, boy, I tell you, you get five people in a room and they'll tell you five different things about what that means to them.
Right.
I'd like to hear from your perspective as a superintendent what that means for folks in the downtown.
I think you're right. The one thing that surprised me with the North End is that the previous inspector that was there, Brian Sincora, I don't know where the lady, and I forget your first name, I'm
Rosie.
Sorry. Rosie. I'll remember Rosie now from now until the time that I talk to Keith tomorrow. Brian Sincora was the inspector out in the North End for the last 3 years, and Brian was very involved with the community, and I know that in particular with Point Wissell Burroughs, I don't know if you're aligned with Sell at all?
Yeah, I'm just talking about, I'm going back several years, so
okay.
I can't forget about, you know, the power project, whatever.
Okay.
Like, what we have happening right now in our given area is something that we've been working on for over 20 years. But what I'm saying is, let's go back, say, 15 years when there was actually respect at the street level towards the police, where people were finally coming out of their shells and talking, the people who would say could be called problematic in some eyes.
Yeah.
You know, we need to build layers of trust and at every level, okay?
Okay.
Because, like, I've heard good attitudes from police, but I've also heard some awful attitudes. Attitudes that, you know, have no place in a modern society. So if you look at it, say, once again, me, homeowner, former business person, now semi-retired individual, I've seen it at all levels. So what I'm saying is, you know, the dialogue idea, let's do it.
Okay.
It doesn't cost a bloody thing. We've got a great space downtown. Let's make it a real community forum and keep the police involved. Don't separate them out. Don't ostracize them. We need everybody involved.
Okay. So that's good. Thank you for that. And then I'll address what Sean said. Just,
I hope you can hear me.
I can. You're
it's that broadcaster's voice.
I can hear you, Rosie. The just last Tuesday at the Manitoba Métis Indian Friendship Center, there was a forum that was put on by the now the new inspector Cam Baldwin in partnership with Nancy Flett, who runs the Friendship Center, and the report that I got back from Cam and our community support sergeant out there is Bonnie Emerson, was that it was a very productive, it was a very positive event, that it was very well attended, that the different groups, community groups in that area showed up and were able to use that as a forum to express some of their concerns and to get involved with some of the initiatives. We do have programs that involve the community, whether it's Citizens on Patrol, Neighborhood Watch. We recently rolled out a new program called CAN is the acronym. It's the Citizens Action Network. Where the goal behind CAN is to enable the community groups to build capacity within themselves to identify and deal with problems. And not only on their own, that we're there to assist, that we're there to enable that process, but we will also hook them up with the resources that they need to deal with that specific problem. Community policing is a philosophy. It means so many different things to so many different police services. It's you bend it and you shape it and you figure, okay, this is going to work for us. In order to have an effective community policing approach, one of the things that we do as a police agency is we need to look at what other agencies have done, look at best practices, look at what hasn't worked, not try that, but what has worked, and can we mold it to the specific issues that are existing in those communities. Engagement with the communities, with the people that live there, absolutely. They're the key people in that solution, and then it's enabling those solutions. And it's not just the police that we need to work with, the other city departments, whether it's community services or maybe not even police, it's NGOs, and we need to deal with the other agencies, outreach that can offer resources. A lot of time the resources are out there and they exist. The problem is, the gap is that we don't know how to connect to them. And that,
my own personal comment about the police services, I think that we put far too much work on their plate. They've become a social agency and they have to solve dozens of problems that they're not equipped to do, and I think that that's the responsibility of government, but that's my own point. Here, what's your question?
I just want to clarify what vision of safety we're talking about here. I think that you've maybe tried to construe, I mean, there was acknowledgement of safety being different for different people. So I guess my question is, does your vision of safety rely on the removal of some people from downtown? It seems as though all of you have talked about a safety being achieved for, you know, people who are shopping or people who are working in office buildings. We don't want to have people participating in alternate economies that aren't violent, necessarily. They don't have to be violent, like drug dealing, et cetera. We don't want people sitting, loitering downtown. And that seems to me to be a really specific understanding of safety for some at the expense of others. So just with a yes or no answer, do you... Yes or no answer, because, you know, to respect the fact that this is our turn, right? You already had your turn. Does your vision of safety rely on some people being removed from downtown?
I think that's a fair question for not only Dave, but also the biz, and I'd like to hear from them all as well. Does safety mean you got to move people out? Yes or no? Go ahead. Take it up.
Yes or no.
Yes or no.
No, no, but let me expand.
The button against the no. Yes or no.
Yes or no? Okay, yes or no. So it's not that simple. It's not.
Well, that's what you're doing.
Because the biz
force is removing people from downtown.
And
I think that that's not, you know, it doesn't have to, it's because it's a business association, right? Okay. So you're interested in business interests. And all we're concerned about is making sure that the biz doesn't have as much power at dictating downtown safety issues, because we recognize that the definition of safety from a business perspective is very different than a definition of safety from a social justice perspective.
I agree. I take those applause hurt because I stood up. You know,
no.
Yes, yeah, yeah. just for clarity. I think what happened when people are removed, and here's the issue. We have somebody before talked about IPTA. IPTA is an act. It's a provincial act. It's called the Intoxicated Persons Detention Act. The purpose behind IPTA is to protect vulnerable people who aren't able to look after themselves.
Then why are the redcoats doling out beatings?
Well, you know what? And I think to yell out a comment like that without any substance, or if you have a...
We all
if
have
you
a have context a, for that, which is a lot of...
Okay, you know what? Okay. I can't comment on that. You're putting me in a spot where there's no evidence in front of. No. You're giving me evidence that I can't give you a yes or no answer to.
Yeah.
You asked me before, and I can't.
Okay. You guys asked him a specific question.
So here's the when people need to be removed, one of the circumstances that people need removed, and you may choose to believe what I am about to say or not, that's your right. Sometimes for their own good and their own protection, they need to be taken because they're vulnerable, they aren't able to care for themselves, and they need to be taken to a safe place where they can receive that, okay, that care.
So why does a business association get to decide who needs to be removed from downtown?
Yeah. Well, and that's a totally fair question, but that's not necessarily a question for a police officer. That's
well,
a question for the mayor. But
panel.
Don't you
yeah.
think it's a question for the mayor and the premier and the people that make the laws? Because because
every
they've given these powers.
Every individual has the opportunity to take responsibility to implement or not implement the law. It's up to people to be self-accountable and make decisions on their own ethics.
Okay, so I'll push back, and that's only what I'm doing. I'll push back and I'll say when somebody is so intoxicated that they're in the middle of the road and they're going to get hit by a vehicle, what's their personal responsibility?
Yeah, but use hypothetical situation.
Most of the time, they're not in the middle of the road. They're sitting somewhere, and they're
fair
making
enough.
People uncomfortable.
Fair
so
enough.
What?
Okay.
What
so
if you can't afford to go drink in a bar? Why shouldn't we be able to drink outside?
Can I just get one follow-up question from you folks? Because you've made some allegations about brutality, and I want to go to that because those are very, and Gabrielle alluded to it. We listen very closely, or we attempt to listen very closely. I haven't got a phone call, or our newsroom isn't aware of brutality from, for example, the Biz Patrol. But you seem to have that information. Now, have you made complaints to the police service? Have you?
The Free Press refused to carry the story, and any other mainstream media outlet also refused to carry the story.
Okay.
It can't be officially substantiated unless there's actually a formal process that's publicly reviewable. So our complaints can't be substantiated.
So
there's no process to substantiate them.
Okay. Therefore, the media filed 6 months later. The Biz didn't tell anybody. He was back on the street 1 month later, allowed to keep doing his dirty deeds, and then finally fired quietly without anyone knowing. So, you know, and we can't know how many people the Biz beat or kidnap, which is what they do as a course of their job, because they don't report those statistics.
Okay.
It'd be nice to know how many people the Biz attack. We have to just assume it's like in the thousands, or else why would they be hiding that information?
And there's a second half to this. Who in their right mind, after experiencing trauma, is going to go to the same organization to complain and cause that trauma in the first place?
Okay, so why don't we get Rick Joyal up here. Rick, it's your guys, and these folks, and there are more than one of them, are saying that at least one member of your group has done something. Now, first I'll ask you, have you heard this complaint?
Well, we had one where the police were involved about, I'm losing track of time, but it was a number of years back. And the police were given all the information and they did investigate it. So that was in their hands, and then they came back to us and there was no charges laid. So, you know, the thing is, we take these issues very seriously. And I can honestly tell you that... Can you let me finish?
Yeah, let him finish.
Just let me finish. You know, we take these things very serious. And one of the things that we want to do is any time something like this comes forward, and we know about it, but what you're talking about is criminal, okay? And if it's criminal charges, then that has to go to the police. And we leave the police...
are the criminal.
We leave the policing up to the police.
Point, live in a culture of impunity. Nothing can be done. It's shown time and time again that you live in a culture of impunity. And how is it that the people who... we go to are the same ones who press people every day to actually resolve the solution. It's ridiculous. It's preposterous.
How many
Get
cases
real.
Through LIRA have actually resulted in charges against police officers?
Versus how many are filed?
None last year. None the year before. None
Sean, do you want to...
Ever heard of the...
You know, I don't know how many cases actually have gone through LIRA this year. I know that they've got a huge backlog of cases.
Yeah.
And I also know that they're short-staffed, and the guy that runs it has said time and time again that they are short-staffed.
Are you the moderator or an apologist for these panels?
I'm not apologizing for anybody.
Okay.
I was asked to answer the question.
When I was part of Cop Watch, we participated in the review to create the Police Services Act. Every single person that was in that process acknowledged LIRA doesn't work, and it was not solved by that process. We tendered reports to the Ministry of Justice where they didn't even call us back on the reports. So you can't say there's a dialogue. There's a wall against the community when we engage in these types of things.
So what's your best model for an improvement? That would be the question I would ask.
Abolish the police! Abolish the police!
Okay. That is a dream I agree with, but it was posed in the first question that I asked. Democratically elected and recallable oversight by civilians with no law enforcement ties of the police services immediately. That line could be drafted in a day and put in the Police Services Act.
Okay. What's your question?
Alright, there's a lot of issues here that I agree with and that I won't speak to because there's people who know more about them and can say things more eloquently about them than I can. So I'm here to talk about what I know best, and I'm asking this question as the founder and director of Hollaback Winnipeg, which is an organization launching in December that fights against sexualized street harassment of women and LGBTQ folks. Reports say that 80% of Canadian women, so that goes for Winnipeg as well, are experience street harassment by strangers. 100% of those women say that it affects how safe they feel in their community. So it's completely topical here. I have been sexually harassed twice by strangers in front of Biz Patrol. One time I kept walking and ignored the harassment. The other time I confronted my harasser with some pretty bold language in a pretty high volume. And neither time did either one of those, anybody of the Biz Patrol step in to help defuse the situation or ask me if I was okay or needed help or offer support to me. So since what I've been hearing from everybody here tonight is the poor single woman who gets to walk back to her car, it sounds like an alarm ad, right? The woman who's sitting there waiting for a predator. Why have I experienced these things and spoken to many women whom have been sexually street harassed by members of the Biz and by members of the police? And how are you going to make women feel safer on the streets?
So, women safer on the streets.
No, we wanted to say something. Let him.
Yeah, no. Superintendent, why don't you get up and take a stab at this?
Just because that seems to be the common thread here with one of the ways that you're helping and
yeah.
Not seeing it.
And you know what? First of all, that I'm sorry that you did have to experience that. I have a wife and I have a daughter, and my hope would be for them is that they can walk down the street and they not be subjected to what you did. So I see and I hear the fact that that impacted you, and I'm sorry that that happened. Your question to me was, what can the police do to better protect women?
Also the Biz too. Also the Biz.
But you know what? I'll speak for the police.
One of bringing trannies on track.
Yeah.
That's what you could do.
Do what?
Not you specifically.
No.
Yes, member.
Okay. I wrote that. So, what we would do as a police service, like, we can't be everywhere all the time, and
I
say, well.
You're the problem those times.
I'm the problem.
Let him answer the question, and come on up and line up if you want to ask a question. So hang on.
I guess if what you're telling me is that some of our employees at some City Winnipeg police officers.
It was Biz in my experience, but I've heard from other women that there was police officers present or doing the harassing.
Okay, so. And then you know what? Then that is totally unacceptable.
Okay.
People need to be held accountable. In order for that to happen, and I know, just let me, I know,
hang on.
You must be a mind reader, because what I was about to say, actually, I was expecting your response to it, is that if we are going to guarantee some accountability for us to be accountable for our employees, and we do, is that we need to hear about it. And I know I heard somebody made the comment about how can the police the police, and it's a good question. But I can tell you that, and believe me if you want, you don't know me, we've never met, I'm a policeman, and right now that isn't the most favored occupation in the room, but if we do receive a complaint, that we do take it seriously, we do investigate it, and we do investigate our members based on the complaint.
I went to make a complaint to the police, and went in tears, extremely upset, and was turned away, and said, I'm sorry, there's good cops out there, there's bad cops out there. You run into a bad cop, too bad.
Okay, well,
so I've lost faith in that
Yeah.
Accountability system.
And I can understand why you would lose faith in that. Would you? I tell you what. If it's a recent example, and if you have some dates, then we can talk after.
I have photographic evidence. Okay.
Come
and see me. Yep.
Okay, Rick, quickly. So the allegation is that your members, the people that are working for you, are ignoring this particular activity. First, really quickly, what are they supposed to do on the street? And secondly, how do you react to this comment?
Well, first off, I apologize that you had to, excuse me, like Dave said, you know, we don't want to see anybody go through that kind of harassment. And
Aboriginal people.
You know, let's be dignified here. There's a process. If you want to ask a question, go up there.
Your organization is obscene. Yeah. Just because I want to speak out against it doesn't mean that what I'm saying is obscene.
I think Sarah's one of the most dignified people in the
room. Sarah! Okay, so answer the question. So what are your members supposed to do on the street and address this lady's concerns?
They should have at least approached you and asked you if you're okay. And and then proceed from there. I mean, it's to get you out of that kind of environment, making sure that you aren't harassed, you know. And again, like Dave said, if it's something that happened recently, and you have documentation on the days and times, the dates that it occurred, I'd be more than happy to look into it and to find out who was walking there and if I can identify. And then in some cases, it's providing people with more training.
You know? I also say that sure. The time that I was harassed and confronted my harasser, it wasn't the kind of person that I'm guessing from the things that I've heard, that some of the people sitting on the stage necessarily assume. It wasn't a drunk homeless person. It was a man in a business suit going to work. And I feel like...
Those are the real enemies.
I feel like that is the reason, thank you, why nothing was done. Because it's not the typical harasser, although it absolutely is the typical harasser. Men on a power trip.
Right. Like I said, we'll follow through with it if you want to get a hold of me, and I'm more than happy to look into it.
Gabrielle Giraudet wants to actually join in on this.
I apologize. I'm not trying to insert myself in the argument, but my heart leapt when you talked about this, because just yesterday I was talking to some women at the university, and they were telling me all about Hollaback. So, way to go. Nice to meet you. What's your first name, if you don't mind me asking?
Jody.
Okay, Jody. So Jody did a really, really brilliant, smart thing that she just referred to, and you noticed that Dave, I'm about to make your life even tougher, but you noticed Dave's eyes leapt a little bit when you said it. You said that you got badge numbers. That's the key thing. So if you feel that you have an issue, and I spread this to everyone in the room, everybody has a four-numbered batch number that will be somewhere on their body. Grab it. And, the old guys have three. And Dave's going to hate me even... I already made Dave's life a little bit difficult. And I'm about to make it a bit more difficult. So sorry, Dave. But Dave is actually an amazing police officer, and he is in charge of, I don't know, maybe 1,400 city police officers, along with a few other people. So, you know, City of Winnipeg email addresses, sorry, Dave, at winnipeg.ca, dthorne@winnipeg.ca, or whomever else you want to deal with. And I bet you if you're articulate and you get badge numbers and you go to the top or go to someone's sergeant, go to make sure you ask for the head of the division, speak to them, tell them your concerns, and I bet you, especially if you have badge numbers and you have a time and place and location, those guys aren't going to get off scot-free. No way.
Although I'm trying to get the badge numbers, they were positioned so I couldn't easily read the badge numbers and had asked for space around them while they were making their arrest, and I was asking for the badge numbers. They said that they weren't required to give them to me. I said I would have to get close to read the badge numbers, and they said do it and see what happens.
I don't have a perfect solution, I'm just saying that I tell you, really believing and having seen both sides of this, if you make a complaint to a senior sergeant, someone who runs a division, or someone like Dave, there'll be traction there. They do not want those guys running around. They don't. They know it's a liability because you'll call people like me and I'll listen.
So that was just some of the exchanges that happened during the forum on downtown safety hosted at the Low Pub, organized by the Downtown Biz. And finally, I will leave you with the words of Damon Johnson, chair of the Aboriginal Council of Winnipeg.
And as you know, as all of you know, right now, as an Aboriginal leader, if I go down to the remand center, what am I going to see? I'm going to see a place full of my people. I go to Headingley, same thing. I go to Stony Mountain, same thing. What do I see in the future? I see more of us there. When I became president of the Aboriginal Council, an RCMP officer was assigned to our file. Why? I think back in when I was a leader in Ontario in the 80s, and I was quite a bit younger, and I was more prone to saying things out loud. I think I made a comment about blood in the streets or something in Sault Ste. Marie. And I think since that time on, I've been watched. If you read the papers at all, you might have seen that Cindy Blackstock, one of our most prominent Aboriginal people in the country, well-spoken woman, speaks way better than I did. It was in the news that she's being watched, monitored by the government.
Federally.
Yes, yeah. And I wasn't shocked by that at all, surprised in any way. Canada is a state, and it's a democracy to a degree, but the powers that be will act as necessary to address any potential for threat to the state, whether that comes from me or anybody else. And the threat to the state is challenging the status quo, or the power that rests in the status quo. And some people here have identified huge systemic challenges. And Canada, since the early years of it as a country, has created many systems. Now, our total population is less than the state of California, and yet we have way more government than the state of California. We have three levels of government, at least. We have Aboriginal government now taking shape as well. And I don't think the model is any different right now on reserve in most cases than it is off reserve. If you go on the reserve, you'll find that the chief and council are probably the wealthiest of the citizens, and that the resources of that community are directed, for the most part, to their benefit. That's a fact. So what they've done is replicate the bigger system in a very good way, and that was meant to be, because the capitalist system was laid on us. The Indian Act, what it did was changed our historic structure of governance to the corporate model and to the hierarchy, which means that those on top will eat better than those on the bottom. So that's the reality of the world we live in, and it's not much different from one country to the next. And often, even when you have revolution, the change that you end up may be worse than what you were in. That's another reality. So we have to be careful what we wish for. But I think, certainly from my perspective, there are things we can do slowly and steadily to improve the way we live with each other. And the first is learning to talk to each other in a respectful way and to treat each other with respect.